Welcome to AMD Tech Talk, your source for the latest in data center innovation and insight on AMD's latest technology breakthroughs. And now here's your host, Jim Green.
Thanks for listening today. Our guest is Arun Nandi, head of data and analytics at Unilever. Many of us have probably already interacted with the Unilever products by this time of the day in the course of our day. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. Arun, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jim. Pleasure to be here.
Arun, a business as large and varied as Unilever must have a tremendous amount of data. How do you look at the opportunity to tap that data to create more customer value?
Absolutely. Let me start off by firstly acknowledging what you said about folks having interacted with a Unilever product. So we pride ourselves on 2 out of 3 people in the world use a Unilever product in a year. Hopefully that Unilever product this morning is not a Ben & Jerry's ice cream. It might be early in the day for an ice cream, but no judgment there. There's never a bad time for a Ben & Jerry's, which is one of my favorite brands. But we are a large company which sells everything from soaps to soups, as we say. So we have a revenue model which spans across beauty and well-being, personal care, home care, nutrition and foods and ice cream. So a large portfolio of brands that we manage. And we are, of course, in 190 countries across the world, literally everywhere people are consuming a fast-moving product, we are there. So with that comes a lot of data as well, as you alluded to. So there is a lot of data in our data estate, varied kinds of structured and unstructured data that we are generating internally, as well as that which we're acquiring from partners within our ecosystem, second parties like our customers who are large retailers, distributors, wholesalers within the world, as well as third parties, many different media and marketing agencies, market intelligence firms, etc. So there's huge amounts of data that we have, which we're gathering. And of course, this is continuing to increase as we move forward. So with that comes the opportunity for what we can do with the data. So we like to treat data as an enterprise asset where we have the ability to influence the intelligence of the decision making. And our goal is to make every data-driven decision an intelligent one. So the trajectory from moving from data poor many years ago to data rich to then be data intelligent is the journey we're on. And really harnessing the data that we gather and use that towards better and sharper decision making is the basis of what I do on a day-to-day basis, as well as a lot of the people internally as well.
Fascinating. It's a great starting point. So if you look at kind of the industry and across all industries, really, we're clearly in the era of generative AI. And everyone really seems to be focused on the topic of when and where are we in the path of our AI adoption for ramping in the enterprise. Since you're in a multinational enterprise, can you share a little bit of your view on this?
Yeah, so it's fascinating that we've been in this AI cycle, some would call it a hype cycle, for about 2 years now. And I think there's a great graph about the evolution of a hype cycle and how it progresses over time. And Gartner's got a great chart that talks about that. And the initial hype cycle followed by this trough of despair, I think, and then followed by a steady increase up to a plateau. So I think we've seen a little bit of that. We've seen a little bit of that in the enterprise domain. Large companies and large enterprises are really looking at the ability to harness generative AI to drive gains, impact across the organization. I'd say a large part of the Gen AI efforts in the first few months and years have been focused in large enterprises on the productivity aspect. I believe I read a study which talked about 98% of all of the use cases in Gen AI development up till earlier this year were really productivity based, which is great, which is, I think, the start of what is to come and really scratching the surface. And really a lot more, I would say, impact that we are probably going to see going forward is going to be within the revenue generation space, designing newer product lines and having the ability to generate cost savings and cash release as well.
Excellent. And again, all of those good things, right? Productivity as well as innovation. So as a technologist and a business person, What do you view as the hurdles to overcome as you look at more broad-based Gen AI advancement opportunities, and how is the industry advancing to help address them?
Yeah, there is a lot of opportunity that we can start addressing once we have a structured process and an approach, the right systems in place to do that. And I'd say one of the foundational systems that large enterprises think about and must think about is a governance and establishing an AI governance. When I interact with many peers and practitioners in different forums, I recognize that there's a lot of different industries that are in fairly regulated and compliance-heavy industries that are still sitting on the fence when it comes to Gen AI and looking at how they can potentially dip their toes in the water, but really not jumping into the deep end, so to say. And you see a lot of that, but you also see some excitement around what you can drive out of it. So the foundational element of building this governance, having a collaborative approach to bringing in different parts of the organization, cybersecurity, legal, looking at intellectual property, a lot of the different concerns that typically enterprises will have to an emerging technology such as this, I think establishing that really helps in determining how you want to progress going forward. Having a strategy for what you want to drive through AI and more specifically through Gen AI is important as well. And then another aspect that this governance can really address is the ability to form an intake funnel or a backlog of all of the initiatives and opportunities that you have and assessing which ones are really the ones that you want to go after to build your core competency, to build your short and long-term gains that you want to look at. And that has been something that we have seen a lot of strength in. We've written a paper with Thomas Davenport, who is an acclaimed analytics writer for MIT Sloan, about responsible AI within Unilever. And it talks about a five-step approach that I've contributed to, which essentially lists the different ways in which we think about ethical and responsible use of AI. And it truly comes down to this governance that I'm talking about. But of course, it has other elements within it, which is use case determination, which is a very strong determinant to success within Gen AI initiatives, and many other parts of that journey, including adoption as well.
I'm glad you brought that up because you highlighted all the very real touch points and the serious implications behind these. What parts of the business or what business functions do you see adopting Gen AI assistants and agents most rapidly, given some of the constraints and need to prioritize that you just talked about?
I'd say there is a fair degree of applicability for the Gen AI and agentic AI initiatives across functions. I would say that a lot of the talk that you see out in public discourse is related to CRM and sales. So those tend to be ripe for disruption, of course, with their ability to drive that along with customer service, with the ability to drive productivity and efficiency gains by having augmented agents, by having conversational bots, which can help you navigate through some of these decision systems. Those are really the starting point on how different functions can leverage AI. I'm personally a big believer in the impact that Gen AI can bring to marketing and media and some of those functions. So for companies that invest a lot, billions and billions of dollars in media, there's a significant amount of capability to use Gen AI for everything from media mix management, media investment allocation, media buying activities, a lot in the digital commerce and social media space as well. So there's really a lot of opportunity across different functions. I think it's got to come down to the capability of meeting a lot of the demand and prioritizing them as well. That's going to be key as we juggle short and long-term priorities, short-term priorities of driving ROI, but also long-term priorities of building a core competency that can be a differentiator for yourself and your organization relative to your peers and competitors.
Excellent. That's a great perspective there. What are the challenges as you go through this prioritization process, right? What are the challenges and expected paths in achieving ROI from Gen AI and agentic AI initiatives?
One of the top areas where organizations are potentially struggling right now is related to change management and adoption and driving that. I was in a room with a set of peers in a forum where the question was asked, this was maybe 3 months ago, where the question was asked on how many organizations have realized ROI through their Gen AI initiatives. And two people raised their hands in the entire room, one being myself. So I really see a lot of challenges that large enterprises, Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies are dealing with respect to adoption. So let me share a couple of points on what I find useful within that. One, I'd say that a strong focus on driving adoption is necessary. So I talk about this inverted pyramid of AI investment, which suggests that 10% of your resources is spent on models and algorithms, 20% on tooling and technology, and the remaining 70% on driving change. And that's important because ultimately, in most non-technology companies, you're driving change, which is the output that you're driving from some of these solutions, is essentially a people change or a process change that you've built over many years, tens of years in many cases as well. And to effect that change, you really have to build an ability to integrate that into your processes, into your people responsibilities, and have a way in which can drive that impact. Otherwise, it tends to run into this challenge that we've seen. The second thought I would add here is the ability to realize this benefit. So my learning has been that there's a difference between identification of your value from a use case and your realization of that value. And the difference between that, and there is a drop-off between your identified versus your realized value, and that's really the difference between converting your notional impact into real impact. In many productivity-based use cases, you see a lot of notional value that you are creating on paper. I've seen large companies talk about it publicly as well. eBay has spoken about how they have driven developer productivity by 45%, etc. There's other companies that have spoken about certain percentages of productivity that they have driven. Largely, what this comes down to is notional productivity gains, because you're not yet able to convert those benefits from what you've identified into a commercial, into a P&L benefit. And there are a few steps that are required that companies need to invest in for you to take that notional into a real. And that's going to take a certain amount of effort in a certain amount of time. So having a structured effort behind that process can really help drive outcomes that are successful for the enterprise.
Great discussion. I expect that AI also presents some common decision paths here, specifically, like in many IT operations, right? You get the choice, do you build or buy? When it comes to things like model training, do you see a trend in taking an off-the-shelf model or building and training yourself with your own data?
Great question. So I would anticipate that most companies of a certain size and scale, perhaps, or most companies of a certain maturity have a decision flowchart related to their build versus buy framework, right? We do as well. And we think about what are these competencies that we want to build versus others that we want to buy. And that is typically going to be an evolution over your maturity as well. And you might have started off from a different place, but you might want to progress to a different part of that spectrum and where you are. Specifically, when you think about foundation models, this has been an interesting discussion. I'd say that some of the original efforts in the earlier months led to many enterprises training and fine-tuning their own models. And some of the learning from those initiatives has been that the next release of that model really blows out of the water some of the training that you may have done and some of the fine-tuning you may have done. Unless you're working with very specific proprietary data, unless you're working in a space where a lot of the data is regulated and there's a compliance umbrella under it with which you need to do this by, a lot of the future releases really take away a lot of the work that you may have spent in fine-tuning these models. So more sustainable solution architecture like RAG and other knowledge graphs, as an example, can help potentially drive better accuracy, better performance as well. And I think they have an ability, of course, to influence your tokenomics and how you're dealing with increased tokens, especially if you're procuring models from proprietary providers. And if you're self-hosting and running it on your own infrastructure, of course, that brings its own sets of challenges. But I think there's a very clear perspective today, which a lot of the organizations are getting behind, which is model agnosticity. So I'm a firm believer that we need to progress in the direction of model agnosticity and be able to plug and play different models for different use cases. These may not be the large language models, the trillion parameter, the 400 billion parameter models that are probably the most general purpose ones that are available out there, but smaller models that are purpose-built specifically for certain functional domains I think, play a key role in having this ability to be model agnostic. And I think practitioners have the accountability to abstract away some of this from their end users and provide this layer where you can orchestrate different query routing and model routing processes. And I think a lot of the key players are moving in this direction. In Microsoft Ignite a couple of weeks ago, they spoke about AI Foundry, which is essentially looking at a multi-model solution architecture for orchestration. Databricks with Mosaic has been doing that for a while. So there's a lot of different IaaS and PaaS providers who are really talking about this, but this has been something that I believe as the ability to really take control of your outcomes, because there is really a lot of development out there from a foundational model perspective. And there is no one-size-fits-all today for all use cases.
So you spoke about changing a lot of different aspects from the top-level technologies to tools to processes. In what ways are the underlying infrastructure for your IT environment critical to enabling the type of AI approach that you talked about here? How do you see the infrastructure requirements changing as you have to do more training, inference, and integration with multiple types of models, all of the stuff you just mentioned?
So it comes down to these three foundational building blocks, right? So it's compute, data, and your models or algorithms. And when enterprises think about these three elements, you think about your ability to influence your compute. You really think about your ownership of the data and the quality and building the architecture that can really enable that data to be utilized. And a lot of the algorithms, again, you're procuring either off the shelf in many cases, or you're using forks of something that's been available off the shelf. So compute plays a really important part in this equation. And as we've seen recent advances, which have continued to progress the evolution and the price performance of compute and what that's done for our industry really at large, that is a great opportunity for organizations to take control of their infrastructure, whether you're using it as a service or whether you're using it in co-located data centers, which there's a lot of talk about, or you're using it in more traditional forms as well. And I think there's an opportunity to really leverage a lot of that development to further your needs. The one caution against that is the increasing costs that come from it. I read a recent article which talked about how many companies are thinking about moving away from IaaS and PaaS providers because of the spiraling costs. And I think that's reflective of a couple of different phenomena that are taking place. One, spiraling compute costs could be a resultant of organic increase in your use cases, but it could also be a resultant of solution architecture, which isn't built on sustainable compute models. So having an ability to go and influence that is important. I'm saying that as having built a newer FinOps capability, a more evolved FinOps capability this year in 2024, which is something that we've had a lot of success with. But it comes down to organizations which are able to determine their outcomes through more efficient and sustainable use of compute going forward. I have a hot take here, which could be a little controversial, which is around the definition of productivity. So the Department of Labor says the definition of productivity is your output divided by a single unit of labor, which is a person today. I think in future, it's going to be a single unit of compute as the denominator for your productivity, because we're moving to a space where a lot of your tasks and your processes through agentic AI and other initiatives is really driven by compute as taking the place of human intelligence, of course, in many cases where we're able to drive those outcomes. But I think, yeah, there's a very exciting future out there which we're progressing towards.
So this is great. I'd like to wrap up with your thoughts here on how AI capabilities impact your engagement more broadly in the markets that Unilever operates in. And does it change the approach to new products, markets, or businesses?
So we've been on this journey of having an opportunity to serve our customers where they are and for what they are looking for. So what that manifests into is recognizing micro opportunities for growth, having the ability to forecast your business much more accurately, and having the ability to serve these customers through your brands in different and evolving routes to market as we do that. A lot of these are opportunities that we have realized through more traditional machine learning models in the past, and we continue to increase the sophistication of those with GenAI models as well. In one example that I can share, we have in one proof of concept that we ran in Mexico, we have saved around 18,000 miles of distributor road time for delivering products of a certain business unit of ours. And that was done through dynamic routing through a GenAI model, which had the ability to reroute the entire distribution network for that specific use case. Those are great examples of how GenAI can really bring a lot of impact into serving customers. This can also play a big role in serving customers in underserved markets, both in the food space. There's a lot about how we can serve some of the food deserts in large metropolitan cities in the US, but also, of course, outside of the US, there's opportunities there. And I think the other opportunities when it comes to sustainability is related to sourcing. So having the ability to source more sustainable ingredients, commodities, and products, which can then form a part of your product. Those are also great opportunities on how we are able to really win in the marketplace through the use of AI.
Fantastic. So you mentioned a lot of great resources, papers that you've collaborated on and case studies. How can folks engage you to learn more and continue the dialogue if they want to learn more?
Yeah, so I'd encourage folks to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to collaborate. I've had a great network of collaborators within academia, private and public enterprises. And I really believe this space that we're in is super exciting. And I think there's this approach of having different stakeholders, governmental, non-governmental, academic, and within enterprises. I think there's a lot we can learn from one another, and we can really help each other progress to the next level of what we're trying to drive through AI.
Fantastic. Yeah, Arun, this has been a great discussion. Thank you so much for sharing. We'll link to you when we do our post into LinkedIn so people can get a hold of you and learn more, because this has been great stuff.
Thank you, Jim. Happy being here.
My pleasure. And thanks to our audience for listening as we talk tech. Until next time.
Thanks for joining AMD Tech Talk. Find out more about the technologies discussed today at www.amd.com.